Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's March 31st, 18 degrees and sunshine here in Old Town Park City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Adam Carroll. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. And I don't know if you like sunshine, but that's pretty much what the story will be here over the next pretty much 4 days across northern Utah, as temperatures only warm and warm and warm some more. We'll start off today, though, in the low 40s for daytime highs after another chilly start. But we'll be in the mid-20s tomorrow for lows and into the mid-50s for daytime highs. We'll go to the low 30s for lows on Friday morning and then into the low 60s for daytime highs. We'll do it all over again on Saturday. We'll be in the mid-60s here for Saturday with more sunshine. All this time, we're just seeing buckets of sunshine. At any way, shape, or form, stormy weather. And then by Sunday for Easter, where the possibility is there that we hit 70 degrees in Park City for the first time this year with overnight lows in the upper 30s, as the warmest air will be on top of us during that time. We will see a little bit more cloud cover. That would be really the one reason why we wouldn't get to 70 because of the increasing clouds. But then we have a cold front on the move. It arrives during the day Monday, drops our temperatures back into the upper 50s, low 60s. And then we have a chance of some showers rolling in on the Tuesday time frame. And we'll be even cooler with temperatures only in the low 50s for Tuesday. And then thereafter, we're looking ahead to, more or less some cooler and unsettled weather. But my goodness, all the way through Easter is going to get so nice, and what a great time to be out and about and enjoy it.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Adam.
You bet.
KPCW News Time now, 8:08. And on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, I have Mark. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Leslie. Temperatures dropped again last night into the teens Fahrenheit, and the snowpack is frozen solid, which will limit avalanche activity today. The sun will warm things up a bit, and there could be some small, wet, loose avalanches, but mainly we're looking ahead to this the rest of this week and this weekend as temperatures warm more and more each day, and with that, we will expect to see more wet avalanche activity moving forward. Otherwise, the danger is low today, and first thing this morning, if you're on a slope that's frozen and icy, the big danger would be falling and being unable to stop.
Okay. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:09. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with the CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Colin Hilton. We'll have a look at how the winter season went as well as what's ahead this summer. Park City Manager Matt Dias with a preview of this week's two city council meetings. There's one tonight as well as tomorrow. The executive director of Summit Community Gardens, Sloane Johnson, also with an update on the opening of the gardens as well as some of their upcoming events. Also, stay tuned for the Mountain Life right after the local news hour. Today's guests there are author Michelle Borba, who has written the books Thrivers, The Surprising Reasons Why Some Kids Struggle and Others Shine. Then sports journalist Julie DeCaro, who has covered professional sports, talks about her new book, Sideline, through candid interviews, personal anecdotes, and deep research. She is tackling thorny issues and exploring what America can do to give women a fair and competitive playing field. All of that, again, coming up on today's edition of The Mountain Life. Well, meeting in regular session today, the Summit County Council has an important question to consider about its continued COVID-19 response. The state has announced that it's dropping the mask order by the end of next week. As KPCW's Rick Bruff reports, council members will consider if the county wants to continue its own mask mandate after that.
The council is meeting electronically and will consider the mask order a little before 4 p.m. on their agenda. County Manager Tom Fisher said that among the staff, there's been quite a bit of internal debate.
Our local statistics around vaccination uptake, around case spread, all of those things, you know, hospital capacity, those things that we look at, Summit County's doing extremely well. But, you know, we also know that we have a visitor based tourism economy, plus a workforce that travels in and out every day. So we're concerned about that, as well as the different variants that are starting to see some traction within the United States.
He said the council may consider public comment for the item. Meanwhile, the Chamber Bureau has been surveying its own membership on the question.
We'll talk about it over the next 2 weeks and get some direction from the council this week to see what might need to happen. So far, our businesses largely are saying that they will continue mask mandates within their businesses, even if the local government or the state lift theirs. So I think there's a lot of desire to keep on some level of controls that we're used to and that we can keep in place as long as we possibly can.
The staff report said that under recent state legislation, the mask order is lifted April 10th, but remains for K through 12 in schools or for gatherings over 50 people. The report also says that even a local mask order would be voided if the state met three metrics: the 14-day case rate less than 191 per 100,000 people, a 7-day average utilization of ICUs less than 15%, and over 1.6 million prime vaccine doses going out. Fisher said, though, that doesn't necessarily mean they would be prevented from a mask order by those three standards.
We don't have to drop the mask mandate. It just becomes more of a, for lack of a better word, bureaucratic process to keep them in place, where we have to work with the governor's office and the legislature to make sure that they're okay if we do that. And of course, we would have to agree to put those in place locally. So it just becomes more cumbersome. And perhaps it also just becomes unusual based on what other counties might be doing.
Also on the agenda, they're getting a presentation on the expenses for vaccinations. Fisher said this doesn't concern the vaccine doses themselves, but the local operation to provide them.
I mean, we have several staff dedicated to this effort. You know, we've rented equipment in order to roll this out. We're certainly engaged with the film studio and helping to pay for different things. I mean, for instance, you know, they're allowing us to use the facility, but we're going to pay utilities for the portion that we're using.
He said they've received grants from several sources to pay for the operation, and one more major federal bill is on the way.
This operation is going to last a few more months, so there will be more expenses. But we also know that the American Rescue Act is coming forward, and so we're going to be looking at other impacts of the pandemic, because that's what it's all driven by. The expenditures that you're allowed to make, I mean, at least the guidance we've received so far, is that if you can document impacts to your community around different things, that's what you can expense some of these funds on. So we're beginning that process.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
It's 8:15 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, a year ago, as we know, all of the ski resorts had shut down, as well as the Olympic training venues at the Utah Olympic Park. There on the phone to tell us how things went this winter, as well as what the summer brings, I have the CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Colin Hilton, on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So how did the winter season go? As normal as it could get?
Normal in a pandemic. Yes, I would say some things went better than expected, and some things, obviously constrained with the impacts of a pandemic. So I would characterize, you know, not just at the UOP, but over at Soldier Hollow, the efforts of, getting our athletes, our kids out on snow, both on, on the ski and snowboarding training areas we have at UOP and the cross-country facilities out at Soldier Hollow. We were busier than a normal winter, given the outdoor environments that we have. I would guess that we were probably about 130% of normal for those type of training and some of the public activities outdoors.
Wow, so you were able to then schedule all of the teams wanting to train then, huh?
Local, as the emphasis, or amongst the Intermountain West, less so from sort of domestic and international teams coming here. But obviously with travel restricted. A lot of the Romark and Park City Ski and Snowboard and Team Soldier Hollow, couldn't travel as much, so they were really excited to have the training facilities, and we got facilities open as early as November 17th at the UOP, and late November, early December down at Soldier Hollow, and it was busy. And thankfully, part of the expansion of our mountain expansion at UOP for certainly the Alpine training and the Moguls training became extremely well used and really awesome that we got that project done ahead of this.
Yeah, that was just the first phase of that expansion, though, right? Do you have another phase coming?
Yes. Yeah, phase two up on sort of the mountain to the right as you look at the bobsled track. That's phase two, and we're excited. We're still raising the funds necessary to complete that, but I think we're within reach, and we'll hopefully get underway on that within the year or two here.
All right. So what about events, competitions? We know certainly it wasn't the year for spectator sports, but were you able to pull those off?
Yeah, again, more so on the Intermountain-type events. Some events like Junior Nationals for Moguls that we held just a couple of Saturdays ago down at Soldier Hollow, we actually probably saw a few more events given our availability of getting on the cross-country skiing facilities and the biathlon facilities there. So I would say pretty as active as you can get, and again, mostly regional events and a few national events.
Okay. So did you have any issues related to COVID breakouts?
No. Happy to report, from the event perspectives, the reliance on our help from the local health departments to our NGB partners to our USOC, USOPC, teams we implemented for sort of the more national events and regional events, a COVID testing program, and those were extremely effective, and happy to report we did not have any transmission because of events or trainings.
So budget-wise, how did you guys end up here? I mean, given that you do collect rent, I believe, for your training facilities.
Yeah, the revenues associated with the athlete training are huge. We do get some supplemental help from the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee. So those held true. So we were able to sort of hit the sport training budgets, public activities. Some things were up. And I would say things like cross-country season passes at Soldier Hollow or even day passes were up because people were looking for things to do outdoors. And having either kids in programs or people experiencing our offerings at Soldier Hollow and the UOP, became more attractive. So, I'm a big believer, especially for the kids. Parents were looking for avenues to get the kids out of the house and to a safe and environment that's not just staring at a screen. We delivered in a big way, and it really is a testament to the great staffs that we have at UOP and Soldier Hollow. They just did awesome in finding creative ways to provide the training environments and even some of the public activities were just tremendous.
Now, did you have to furlough any staff, or you kept them plenty busy?
Did not. Very proud of the fact that we did not have to let anybody go because of the pandemic, even through last summer when it first hit. And, little help, as a lot of the nonprofits did, from some of the PPP loans and our fundraising teams finding grants, and our donor community was just amazing. One of the things obviously we do as a nonprofit is raise funds, especially for our youth and community programs. And we weren't able to hold the Auntie Gala last summer, but we actually did a version in February in the winter, and that was a way to engage our amazing donor and sponsor base who support our efforts. And then on the mountain experience, testing out our new facilities here behind the museum this winter. And that was great. And again, a creative way to do a fundraising event outdoors. And we were able to hit the revenue goals that we had hoped for. So again, a big kudos and big thanks to the Wasatch Back community that has really supported our programs through the winter here. It's been very generous and very, very much needed.
All right. Now, what about the new employee and athlete housing? I believe that you borrowed money to build that, and it was to be paid back from incoming rents. So
yep.
Did it stay full? I mean, were you able to meet your bond obligations here?
So in that athlete housing facility, we have roughly two-thirds of the space as apartments for year-round leases for athletes and employees of the UOP. Those were basically full. That remained true. The third of the facility that's dedicated to short-term rental, that was obviously down from what we had hoped. It sort of started to pick up towards February, late January and February. We did have some teams coming to train and use the housing, but that's an area that definitely got impacted. And, you know, we haven't quite seen yet the true benefits of having that available for athletes and teams coming into town, and we hope to get into that a little bit in better fashion, certainly later in the summer and into next winter.
All right. Well, let's take a look ahead at this spring and summer. You do offer a number of summer camps. We've got summer operations, the museum, of course, the fun stuff, season passes. What's the plan for this summer?
Well, as many of our listeners know, the summer tends to be one of our busier periods for a winter Olympic training facility. Strangely so, but it is where the athletes tend to, you know, practice their jumps and flips into the pool, the airbag that we have up here for the free ride and snowboard athletes, roller skiing down at Soldier Hollow. We are planning on being active in those programs. Again, I think we benefit from being outdoors compared to our Olympic Oval facility in Kearns that's indoors. So We are gearing up. We're gearing up for the public programs. We actually are cautiously optimistic, as some of our community leaders are, for folks looking to come into our wonderful community away from sort of those urban settings. So on the public side, we learned a lot last summer in how we operated during the pandemic for both the sport programs and the public programs. They are things and adjustments that we're going to do. We ended up, you know, having activities offered in blocks of time on the day to limit the numbers coming in. And we're going to implement a similar system this summer for sort of the public activities that we offer here at the UOP. And we're cautiously optimistic that we're going to try to get back to some sort of normalcy. We do think sort of the group events, group corporate outings, those things are going to be slow to come back. So we're a little less optimistic on that from the budgeting standpoint that we're going through right now. But generally speaking, we are excited to continue what we have to offer. We think, again, both for our youth and sport programs as well as our public activities, having and utilizing our wonderful mountain environments here outdoors is a great option for people to come and experience what we have to offer at these Olympic training and facilities that are hopefully going to get back to some busyness of activity.
Yeah, so will you be selling season passes?
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. For both the sport programs as well as public activities.
All right. And then, like, what about the events that you host? I know usually one of the earlier ones, you have that fundraiser, the Red Bull 400. Is that going to happen?
We're gearing up for that. And again, like anything in the community, we're going to plan for it and have a contingency if we have to make adjustments. And obviously, we'll continue to work closely with our community partners to do the right things and to be safe and to, but also, you know, be prepared to try to get back to some normalcy. We see it. We will plan things like the freestyle shows that we normally do Saturdays and Sundays at noon. We did some evening, Saturday evening events last summer that went really well. So we're going to potentially do sort of Friday evening and Saturday evening of the freestyle shows and have that again as an outdoor offering, or when you have relatives or friends in town, that will be a fun thing to go to at a little bit different time on the weekend that we have normally done.
Okay. What's the latest now on Utah's efforts to host either the 2030 or 2034 Winter Olympics?
Been very busy on that front, mostly sort of behind the scenes. Our leadership team is probably consuming about 60% of my work week now, and that's all good. We're trying to make the pros and cons of exploring whether 30 or 34 is the right option. It's obviously in collaboration with our partners at the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee. It's in coordination also with the fact that there's a Games in Los Angeles in 2028 for summer. So there's a lot of dynamics of certainly planning a 2030 target. We have actually also engaged now what we're calling the Host Venue Communities Committee, or HVCC. You always got to have a good acronym in the Olympic world. So we're pulling together the elected officials from each of the proposed venue communities. I was quite impressed. The one benefits of virtual Zoom meetings now is being able to get five mayors and five county council representatives who come from Ogden, Provo, Salt Lake, Park City, Heber Valley on a call, and that was to make sure we have a coordination with each of the communities as we plan for our future games. And so we've kicked off that effort just in the last month. And locally here, we have Andy Bierman as mayor of Park City, Melina Stevens from Summit County Council as sort of our two Summit County Park City reps. And then over in the Heber Valley, Mark Nelson from Wasatch County and Colleen Potter from Heber City as reps there, along with Mayor Mendenhall and Mayor Caldwell up in Ogden. And so we've really opened the channels to make sure there's a two-way communication with communities and to start, you know, planning for the potential of hosting a future Olympic and Paralympic Games, which obviously, from my perspective, is a natural for the state. And that effort is being well received, and things like beyond hosting a great month-long set of competitions, the other aspect that really gets my passion flowing is what can these future games do to be an impetus or a catalyst for sort of local community or local government goals, and those are aspects we'll be working very closely with our elected and community leaders in each of these communities.
So in terms of the venues, you know, that's one of the selling points of this is that we've already got them. For the 2002 games, though, Little and Big Cottonwood Canyons were off limits. It sounds like, though, Big Cottonwood could be part of any future Olympic bid, though?
I would say right now we've proposed primarily using our O2 venues. And we are just having those conversations starting up right now. We're actually beginning discussions on venue use agreements with each of the proposed venues. We have not targeted a venue in the Cottonwood Canyons at this point. And certainly depending on the conversations that we have with our existing proposed venues, you know, that would only come into play if we don't have somebody interested in the right terms to be able to fulfill what we want to do with a venue use plan.
All right. And then in terms of the IOC, what's their timeline? Do we know at this point when they plan to announce those?
There is not a defined process anymore. It used to be you could guarantee a big 7-year out vote amongst 5 vying cities. They have avoided that process. They're going to essentially negotiate a location. If you saw some of the recent news, they've even identified even preferred cities, which they've done with Brisbane, Australia, for the 2032 Summer Games. So right now, their focus, though, is primarily on trying to get the games in Tokyo pulled off this summer. And then on the heels is the Winter Olympics less than a year away in Beijing in February of 22. So we don't actually see a large public effort on the part of the IOC and IPC to award anything in this current year. But things should pick up as the year goes on, and into 2022 we'll know much more.
Okay, I need to leave it there. Colin, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Yep, thanks, Leslie. Have a good day.
That's the CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Colin Hilton. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, the Park City Council is hosting 2 meetings this week. The first tonight is a public hearing starting at 4:30 to once again discuss the Park City Arts and Culture District. Then the council meeting in regular session tomorrow, starting in work session at 3:30. On the phone now with a preview of both evenings, I have City Manager Matt Dias. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So first, it sounds like the city may be interested in rebranding the Arts and Culture District. Any ideas what we would call it other than what it is?
No, I don't. I think if that was contemplated or pursued, we'd obviously have some extensive public process to allow the public to help us shape and format that. So, you know, we haven't drawn upon that right now. That's not, you know, particularly our focus. But I guess if that was the will of the community, you know, we would obviously be open to it.
All right. Anything that you heard at Monday night's discussion that you feel like needs more discussion tonight?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the intent of the Monday discussion with former Mayor Thomas, Mayor Bierman, and Councilperson Doinley was really the why. I think we wanted to make sure we stepped back and did a deep dive for the community in terms of how we got here. I think it was compelling to me, you know, just hearing that or rehearing that, you know, we really sought to interrupt the private market forces that were seeking to develop this keystone parcel in the heart of our town. We wanted to draw upon the strength of the resort economy and the fruits of it and the sales taxes that we receive from it and invest that money locally in a transformative way. And we spent the better part of the next year and a half or 2 years working with stakeholders, architects, partners, and the public, trying to design a transformative arts and cultural district that was supplemented with low-income retail spaces, affordable housing, really trying to make this a destination in town as much for locals, if not more. And I just, you know, we wanted to have that opportunity to step back and reassert sort of how we got here. So I don't think there's anything necessarily I'd want to revisit from Monday. But this evening, it's important that we're going to pivot. We're going to pivot from sort of, you know, the why, what we were trying to accomplish, to the how. So we're going to have a fairly detailed presentation on the project, you know, what we've come up with over the last year and a half, working with stakeholders, working with designers, working with Sundance and the Kimball Institute, what it will look like, what it's going to feel like, where the plazas will be, the maker spaces, the housing that will be a component of it, and then how much it will cost potentially. And I think, you know, we're still in the very creative space, and I think there, you know, it's clear that we need to listen. And I was reminded by some public comment that we received that other projects in town have been you know, have gone down a very similar process. You were just talking to Colin Hilton, the UOP and the Eccles Center and the hospital and all of these sources of pride in our community at one point were very contentious and at one point received lots of public input. So the real goal is to explain how we might get there and then to listen to the public. So we've received a great deal of emails, of phone calls, people showing up at our meeting. You know, we're monitoring social media. And I would just double down that I want to encourage that as much as possible. We really, really want to hear from the public.
Yeah. So is tonight's hearing to decide if the council moves forward with this district? I mean, is there going to be some decision like that? Yes, we're moving forward, or no, let's bank the land and see what the future brings?
No, that's not the intent of tonight's hearing. You know, the intent of tonight's hearing is really to listen to the public and explain some of the details that we've been hearing have been missing. I do think in the next several months, you know, we are going to try to seek some type of a direction from council, whether it's to proceed, whether it's to phase an approach, whether it's to redesign some of the project based on the public input that we receive. But we have not scheduled this public hearing to render a decision or a particular outcome. You know, the purpose of this hearing is to educate and listen.
Let's move on to Thursday's regular meeting. That's starting at 3:30 in a work session with special service contracts, and at 4:00 a sales tax presentation. Based on what I saw, fiscal year 2019, we were at $1.9 million. We had budgeted $2.2 originally for the 2021 budget, and then adjusted it down to like $1.1 million. It's come in at like $1.6 million. So we're not doing so bad here compared to what we took it down to.
I mean, I guess I couldn't agree more. As you recall, we were very fortunate, in my opinion, about when the pandemic happened in terms of being able to plan and project and forecast a budget and revenues over the next year. So, you know, the fact that when the pandemic hit and we had to close down our economy, it was late in March. You know, we were very fortunate that it was towards the end of our ski season. But because our fiscal year begins in July, we had several months to sort of forecast what the economic hit and then the economic recovery or efforts towards stability would entail. And so we actually came in July with a provisional budget, if you recall. We told the community, we really don't know what things are going to look like. We're going to adopt a provisional budget for 2 or 3 months, and then we're going to come back and amend it in the fall when we have a better sense of things. And so that's what we did. You know, we were obviously just very lucky on timing. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than smart. But we were very conservative in our revenue estimates. And to be quite honest, the economy has recovered and stabilized to some degree. Now, January is the month that we were the most concerned about. We were still in the throes of a COVID pandemic and then not having the Sundance Film Festival. So obviously, year over year, January is way down in terms of sales taxes and lodging and room taxes. But we were able to predict and prepare for that. Now, those entities, you know, the small businesses, food, dining, restaurant, retail, and lodging, I don't think it was a happy month for them. It's clear that those entities and those businesses took a hit, and you know, we hope we've done everything that we can to date to stand them up and get them through it.
Okay, the transient room tax is down again about 33% from 2019, about 42% from what was projected for this year. So what does that mean going forward?
Well, we, you know, long term, we're expecting a full rebound. We had successive years, I'll say 18, 19, and 20, successive years of almost year over year, incredibly strong sales tax and lodging taxes in our community. And so, you know, the fact that we are comparing ourselves in a pandemic year or even post-pandemic years to all-time highs for our jurisdiction is a formidable feat in and of itself. And so we are comparing ourselves to the absolute top or the absolute highest visitation, most successful years in our community's history in terms of those two metrics. And that's going to be hard to hang with, but we are seeing a lot of optimism. We've heard from the Historic Park City Alliance, from the Lodging Association, that February was better than January, and March is trending incredibly strong. And then we're all familiar with what happened this past summer in terms of our drive market and the strength of the off months in our economy and how favorably we played out. And so we're very, very optimistic looking forward.
All right, let's see. Council will also discuss the affordable housing mitigation plan for the PEG development proposed for the base of Park City Mountain Resort. Why is this coming to council when it's still before Planning Commission?
Well, that's a good question. The City Council is actually the formal housing authority for Park City Municipal Corporation. And as the PEG development company seeks to gain approval for their proposed development at the resort base, their affordable housing plan has to be approved by that housing authority. So council will be reviewing the plan that PEG has put forth, you know, over 100 beds of affordable housing in our community will be required before they're able to develop their project and receive a certificate of occupancy.
Yeah, so we know the build out here will result in a significant demand for new employees, and the resort is providing housing, affordable housing, for about 10% or about 80 of the employees. So where do the rest of them go?
Well, so it's actually a collection, and you know, for the benefit of your listeners, we're discussing a development agreement that goes back to the late 90s with former Powder Corporation, and there are some existing obligations within that existing development agreement from the 90s that PEG has to fulfill. And I believe there's about a 23 or 24 bed outstanding obligation from back in the 90s. And then there are new obligations, as you suggested, looking forward through the new development and the new commercial uses. It equivalates to well over 100. And they've come up with a plan that is a little bit of everything. There's a little bit of a dormitory approach I think there's three dormitory buildings totaling about 30 beds. And then there are just independent, deed-restricted 1, 2, and 3-bedroom condominiums that will be affordable housing moving forward.
Yeah. And again, this type of development that generates minimum wage-earning jobs that keep adding to the number of people that need affordable housing and can't even afford affordable housing at this point. I mean, at what point are we going to have some kind of community discussion to say, isn't it time to change this paradigm?
Well, I'd like to think that, to be honest, that we are and we have. You know, we have an agenda item later in the evening where we're revising our affordable housing resolution, our community's affordable housing resolution, for the second time in likely 3 months, to wring further efficiencies and protect the affordability components in our community. So in less than 3 months, we're back at the table trying to wring further efficiencies and protections out of our housing ordinance. And what we'll be discussing is lowering the threshold that you just mentioned for those that aren't able to buy a deed-restricted unit and have to rent. And so our previous resolution had an 80% threshold of AMI for rental units, and we're lowering that to 50 in an attempt to really reach these lower income individuals or components of our workforce that are priced out of our deed restricted affordable housing. But to take a step back, Leslie, I'd like to think we are and we will continue to. This is an incredibly complex problem, and we are not only regulating to bring affordable housing to the table, we are also spending taxpayer dollars to construct our own affordable housing. We're exploring public-private partnerships. I'd say we have just about every plate spinning in the air that we possibly can. And it's no secret, we have some very formidable challenges ahead of us. The price of land, the cost of development in this community has risen to a level that requires that response to spin 12 plates in the air. We need to take everything that we can and throw it at it, and we'll continue to do that.
Yeah, but I guess my notion of this paradigm is that if we continue to build the type of development that requires minimum wage earner workers, we're only digging the hole deeper. Don't we need to stop digging, right?
Well, I'm trying to find the question in there. I mean, I guess, yeah, in simple terms, I'd like to say no more development. We need to stop and we need time to catch up. Now, obviously, we're in the state of Utah, and there are certain rules and regulations and property rights here that that dictate our roles and responsibilities and how we treat property owners. And so, unfortunately, that's not really an end result that's achievable. But what we can do We can make our regulations more stringent, and we can take money out of the visitation economy and out of the resort development and reinvest that into affordable housing. And how we do so is critical, to your point. And that's the reason we're making rental units or requiring rental units to be structured more towards low-income populations. And that's the reason when we're building our affordable housing, we are gearing them towards lower income populations than we have in the past. We're doing everything that we can.
Okay. Just, I'm out of time, but just want to note that all other items on the agenda include an amendment to the phasing plan for the Utah Film Studios, and also looking at the e-mountain bike courtesy tag program. So that's something else that the council will consider. Anything else quickly that you wanted to add, though?
I did. I just wanted to congratulate. We have three officers in our police department being sworn in, and you know it's unfortunate that we have to do this virtually, because if you've ever participated in one of our swearing in ceremonies, it really hits home the men and women who come to work in our law enforcement fields each day, putting their lives on the line when they bring their families, their grandparents, their children. And so I want to congratulate Lieutenant McKinney, Sergeant Snelson, and Officer Smalling for their promotions. We're very, very pleased to have them with us. They're very community-minded, very into our neighborhood and community policing model, and want to congratulate them and their family.
Okay. Matt, appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
That's Park City's City Manager Matt Dias. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, with the snow melting, it won't be long before we're back in the garden, and Summit Community Gardens has a number of events planned as they head into opening weekend. On the phone, I have the Executive Director of the Gardens, Sloan Johnson. Good morning, Sloan.
Good morning, Leslie.
So first, you are sold out of plots for this growing season there at the gardens?
Yes, we are sold out, and we have a waiting list. So if you are interested in getting a plot, throw your name on the waiting list. We're going to do our best to get people as many plots as we can. If we find other locations or places to place them, we will.
Yeah. How many plots do you have?
We have 132 plots.
All right. And is there plans to expand those at all eventually? I mean, do you have the room to do that?
No. Right now, as far as our expansion plans, we're going to be working on our kids' garden and updating that, but we don't have any plans to add more plots at this time.
Okay. And when does the garden officially open?
So our opening weekend is May 22nd and 23rd.
Okay. Well, in the
meantime, that will also be our seedling sale as well, and we'll have lots of classes and activities going on that weekend.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about that as we get closer to the date. In the meantime, you are doing some registration for an elementary school program. It's called After School in the Garden. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, our After School in the Garden program last fall, and it was a great success. The kids had so much fun in the garden after school and being outside. And so we're doing that again this spring. So that's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It starts on April 12th and goes for 7 weeks. It lasts through May 28th. And we have themes. On Monday, we're going to do art projects in the garden, natural creative art projects. On Wednesdays, we're going to focus on science projects. And then Fridays, we have Randy Joe's going to come and do yoga with the kids in the garden. And we're going to do some more mindfulness activities in the garden.
Okay. Registration is online then?
Yeah, so registration is open. It's online at summitcommunitygardens.com. And, we still have some spots open, so get in and register.
Okay, what's the cost for that?
So if you do one day, it's $175. And then if you want to do the whole thing, it is, I had it pulled up here.
Well, we can send people to the website then. That's fine.
Yeah, you can see another thing.
All right. And then you're also, we'll be hosting summer camps in the garden. And what are these week-long camps?
Yeah. So our summer camps are week-long camps. We have seven different camps. And those open up tomorrow for registration. So some of the camps we have, they're all, geared towards different age groups, but in general, they're first through sixth grade. And we have art in the garden, building a garden, which will kind of work on the STEAM education. We're going to focus on building and the math of putting a garden together and the science. It should be a really fun camp. And we're partnering with EATS for our Chopped and Harvest camps, which we've done for many years and have always been a great camp. And then with Recycle Utah, we have a cycles camp where the kids can bike around Park City, and we look at all the cycles that we use in Park City, for example, recycling and the water cycle and where our waste goes and compost. And that should be a lot of fun as well.
Okay, so you said registration then opens tomorrow, summitcommunitygardens.org?
Communitygardens.org. Okay. And the registration will open tomorrow at 9 a.m.
Okay. You also have a membership program. What's that about?
Yeah, so we recently started our membership program, and this is kind of to help us fund, you know, the future of the garden and get more people involved. If they don't have a plot, they can still be involved in the garden. So we have three membership options. The first is the Ladybug option, which is a $50 membership, and that gets you a free class, subscription to our newsletter, and then we'll have some different activities for members throughout the summer. The membership, which is $100, that gets you early registration for kids' camps. We have our Dinners in the Garden series. You can get early registration for that as well. And then we give you a Summit Community Gardens shopping bag that you can use for coming to the farm stand. And then last of all, we have our Honeybee membership. This is a $250 membership. This is, you know, you get all the things you get with the other memberships, but then we have a special dinner for these members. And this year it'll be, we call it our Bee Lovers Dinner, where it'll be a honey tasting dinner, and they'll have a lecture about bees and why we need bees and what we can do to help the bees.
Okay, and then you are also planning your Dinners in the Garden for this summer?
Yes, we are, and I'm putting those together. And my plan is to open up ticket sales on May 1st for our Dinners in the Garden.
Okay, are these just kind of limited in numbers, just due to the pandemic and such?
Yeah. So for people that don't know, they're small dinners. You know, we're kind of going to see how things are going with the pandemic, but between 30 and 80, depending on the chef. And they're outside dinners. We have tables in the garden. Some of them will be bringing music in, and you have a local chef cooking you a dinner outside in the garden. It's really nice.
Okay, and you said those open up, registration opens up when for those?
May 1st.
Okay. All right, anything else mention?
No, I think that's everything, Leslie. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Just get out and sign up for summer camps tomorrow.
All right, we'll check in with you next month. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Bye.
KPCW News Time now, 8:56. This is the Local News Hour on KPCW. The Park City Board of Education is holding a special work session this morning at 10 o'clock at the school district offices on Kearns Boulevard. The work session will consider the facility renovations proposed for the next 5 years. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more on that.
The Park City Board of Education continues to evaluate financing mechanisms to expand school facilities. The master planning priorities are to move ninth grade into an expanded Park City High School, to move eighth grade to an expanded Ecker Hill Middle School for 6th through 8th grades, and to provide universal pre-kindergarten at each of the 4 elementary schools, along with a wraparound after-school program at 2 elementary locations. The owner's representatives, MOCA consultants, will guide the district through the bonding, design, and building process. The projects will involve the capital expansion of 6 of Park City School District's 7 schools. The school board has not determined a future use for the 8th and 9th grade Treasure Mountain Junior High School. Still, students will not be attending classes in the facility under the new master planning scenario. The price tag is not final, but falls in the $80 to $120 million range. The school board will continue discussions at the special meeting to decide the general obligation bond needed to accomplish the facilities expansions and the phasing plans. Consultants will present costs, phasing, impacts on learning, and green building considerations. The link to the agenda is on kpcw.org. Virtual access to the meeting is not available. It starts at 10 a.m. at the school district offices at 2700 Kearns Boulevard in Park City. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
And the Tour of Utah bicycle race has been canceled for the second year in a row due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. KPCW's Sean Higgins has more on that.
The 2021 edition of the Tour of Utah was taken off the UCI's road racing calendar last week, leaving only one American UCI event on the schedule this year, the Maryland Cycling Classic in September. The 2020 edition of the Utah Stage Race was also canceled at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic last spring. Chairman of the tour, Steve Miller, said in a statement, quote, due to the challenges from the COVID-19 pandemic, the Larry H. Miller Tour of Utah and the Tour of Utah Ultimate Challenge are postponed in 2021. We continue to plan for resuming these events in 2022. Originally scheduled for July 26th to August 1st, the tour is known unofficially as America's toughest stage race, with breathtaking scenery and grueling mountain climbs hallmarks of the route each year. Park City has been a finish location for several stages over the years, most recently in 2019. The cancellation comes as City Hall has begun contemplating its summer event schedule and what a scaled-down 4th of July celebration could look like. Even with vaccinations increasing across the country, the coming months of the pandemic are still a mystery, as Utah has seen a slight uptick in cases over the last weeks. It is currently unclear what health restrictions for events will be in place this summer.
Sean Higgins reporting. It's KPCW Park.